When I worked at Woodlesford, the station master was Tom Swaby. I don't think he was Scottish, but his previous railway career, he'd been the station master at Coldstream on the Scottish borders there. I seem to remember he always used to talk about working up there. On the clerical side, there was a chief clerk called Jack Purry, and under him there was the booking clerk. The regular booking clerk was a guy called John Homant. He lived at Normanton. Then there was myself, sort of attached to them for training. There was two regular porters, Harold and Fred, and there was a number checker based in the station, but there was also number checkers out at site at Skelton Grange and Waterraig. On top of that, Mr. Swaby had been charging all the operational staff, the signal men at Woolsworth Station, Methley Junction, Waterloo, Altoff Station. There was also two porters there.
Just go back to Tom Swaby a bit. Just describe what he looked like and what kind of a chap he was.
Mr. Swaby, he was part of the old school, always smartly turned out in his station master's uniform. He'd got silver grey hair. His age at that time would be about in his early 50s, but he had silver grey hair. Not very tall guy, but quiet, but so forceful in a quiet way, but quite forceful. He lived with his wife, and I believe he had a young son. They lived in the station master's house adjoining the station, which was quite a big, desirable property that's still there now, I should imagine, in private hands and worth so many hundred thousand, but at the time it was a BR property that came with the job.
And Mr. Swaby, did he teach you the job, as it were? Did he have much to do with telling you how to do things?
Mr. Swaby, he would take some interest in, but the main tutor for clerical staff was the chief clerk, Jack Purry. He would be the one who would show you the actual mechanics and paperwork and balancing procedures.
And did you lark about very much, you know, as young office workers?
Not particularly. We didn't lark about too much. Obviously, if there was a quiet afternoon, we'd sneak a look at the paper and buy an ice cream. And, of course, I'd sneak out if I had my camera and I was told a special worker was coming from, I'd sneak out and take a photo of a train or any interesting working that might be tipped off about.
Now, the other characters that I can remember are the porters, so can you just paint a picture of Fred James and Harold Ellis?
Harold Ellis was a sort of typical gruff Yorkshireman from that area that talked with the Barnsley accent, you know, coil as opposed to coal. Fred James, I believe he was a native of Devon, as I remember it. He was more country yokel bloke. No, honest, reliable bloke. It wasn't, you know, the brightest, but you could depend on him, and he'd work hard and keep the place clean and tidy. The porters, the one-two shift, that one would be open up the station, that'd be, say, around about 6 o'clock, and they'd finish about two, and the other porter then would come in mid-afternoon and continue on the evening shift and be responsible for locking up the station. The early turn porter, if it was winter weather, he'd be responsible for lighting the fire and keeping the station warm. And when we say fire, that was one in the outdoor waiting section as well. On the up platform, i.e. the southbound one, there was garden beds. And complementing that was a little aviary where there were some, as I can remember, exotic birds, maybe budgerigars. They brightened up the up platform. Jack Purry was, he hadn't been married very long when I started there, and he lived with his fairly new wife in one of the modern developments that had gone on at Woodlesford. And I believe in the time I was there, his wife either had a baby or was expecting a baby. He was quite a methodical guy, very accurate. He would devote time, teaching any trainees at Woodlesford about booking office procedures and the balancing procedures that we had. We also had auditors came, and he dealt with the auditors. That was one of the things that put sort of fear into people, the fact that the revenue auditors were due from Newcastle, wherever they were based, York. Nevertheless, we had no trouble with them. They were a bit finicky, that everything had to balance to the penny, and woe betide if there was any halfpennies or something loose in the drawer.
Can you remember how much money you'd be taking every day or every week?
The amount of money that I think we used to balance to as a typical daily taking would be only around the £20 to £30 mark.
And how did you get paid?
The payroll was processed at a central payroll department up at Darlington that the North Eastern region had at the time. We used to send the basic documentation, i.e. that would be signalman's timesheets or any other overtime sheets. The pay slips would arrive, and they were computerised. It was early form of computerisation. The pay slips would arrive, and Mr. Swaybeard know the amount that we had to make up wage packets to, and he would go and cash a cheque for that amount and bring the money back and be locked in his office, and either one of us would assist him in making up and checking the wages slips. There was a rule, and this is how times may have changed, that if the computer showed that any employee had a net pay of more than £20, that calculation had to be manually checked. It was for excessive, but occasionally signalmen working rest days and Sunday duty would clock up that amount, yes.
So you'd actually be paying out more in wages than the station took in at the booking office, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes. In terms of wages, I mean, it's probably not a fair comparison, because most of the revenue was actually freight revenue, which was obviously done on credit accounts and contract accounts. So we didn't actually see that cash. The £20 to £30 was actually just cash paid over by passengers.